talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its scenes while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more, people talking,
Edge of Darkness. I'm your host, Jeffrey Bennett. It's Monday. Although an hour ago, I wasn't sure. I took a nap. I did not sleep well last night. A lot going on. And I woke up thinking it was Saturday. And I remember dreaming that I'd had a call from the network and I had to do an earlier show. And it was weird. Strange stuff. Things continue to be unusual out there. I've done something over the last 20 minutes I've purposefully avoided doing because it's just insane. There's a website that I go to that is predominantly entertainment related, but has got some marvelous health issues on it, and will touch on political issues to a point. And I was sickened to the point that probably 90% of what was there all deals with this virus. and the absolute ongoing infighting. Stupid Barbara Streisand is, you know, absolutely hates Trump for obvious reasons, and you know, it blames him personally for the 20,000 deaths, etc. Oh, then he must also be personally responsible for the deaths in China and Italy and on and on and on. Come on. Wake up, you stupid, over-the-hill entertainer. I knew there was a reason I didn't like her when I was in high school. I grew to like her later as a musician. But shut up, please. And then, of course, I have to defer to Dr. Fauci. This guy's strange. I can't figure this guy out. For some reason, Trump seems to want to hold on to this guy and has openly admitted he's not going to fire him. Over the weekend, Bill Sardi wrote an interesting column, a letter to Dr. Anthony Fauci. And in it, he stated, "Excuse me, Dr. Fauci, shall I get my measles immunity papers also? You mean I can't go to work or even get a job without having papers showing that I have antibodies against each and every pathogenic disease, or others can sue me if they believed I've infected them? And why do I need proof that I developed antibodies against COVID-19 when the seasonal flu is more harmful?" That is according to what the Centers for Disease Control says. Some 36,000 deaths from influenza every flu season, and supposedly, who knows, 12,000 deaths from coronavirus this year. Of course, the news headlines have now come out and said, my God, in the last 2 days, we're up to over 20,000. How about my influenza papers, my chickenpox papers, the polio papers, the TB papers? Given that migrants in the U.S. spread TB bacterium all over the country. And I'm sure, Doctor, you're talking about proof of having sufficient antibodies from natural exposure to COVID-19 coronavirus. But even antibodies won't ensure that you won't get the disease again. I don't have to inform you about this, about that, as you are the preeminent infectious disease specialist in the U.S., being in charge of the National Institute of Infectious Diseases. So I hope I'm not educating you about that. And what about the other 240 vaccines that are under development? Well, we need papers for all of those, too. Don't you think having to inoculate children and adults for over 100 different pathogenic bacteria and viruses should be absurd? Maybe even insane? Dr. Fauci, you certainly learned, I should have learned, that the trace mineral zinc is required to make memory T cells in your thymus gland. And with sufficient zinc, exposure to any pathogenic bacteria or virus, whether we're exposed to them via vaccination or naturally from circulation in the community, will produce memory antibodies that provide lifelong immunity. In other words, vaccines don't work very well without zinc. And we may not even need vaccines if zinc is going to facilitate antibody production from any and all pathogens, do we? Dr. Fauci, you need a zinc suppository, stat. Your ideas are as old as Dr. Edward Jenner and his cowpox technology of yesterday. Today, zinc replaces all those vaccines. They didn't tell you this in your virology course in college. Dr. Fauci, you first. Show us your papers that you have antibodies against each and every common infectious disease. Then maybe we can talk. Until then, please go back home and stay in your room. Sardi's an extremely enjoyable writer. The satire is needed. This is a strange program today. It's one of those that, for some reason, as I'm working on websites and other things that I do, and I typically begin to develop programming for the following week, which today, of course, is the first one. And although I did some of that, I have to be honest, I stayed away from this computer a lot this weekend. I reached a point that I'm sick and tired of the headlines. I'm sick and tired of seeing what's going on news-wise. Yes, I published a few pieces over the weekend. But I find that there are things that I need to do in my abode. I mean, given the fact that we're not supposed to be leaving them very often, I've got painting projects outdoors that I've been putting off. My son-in-law is doing a fair amount of preparatory work. We're going to have the entire house painted at some point in time this year. But there are certain things that I do and will not let anyone else do, because they just don't take the care. They want to spray paint everything. And there's certain areas that if I want to get longevity out of it, I do the work myself, but I do it with a roller and a brush because I get far better coverage with it. In Arizona, living in the kind of subdivisions we live in, at least down in the valley, in the Phoenix area, this was not the case up in Flagstaff and Parks, etc., when we lived there. They have block walls separating each piece of property, and of course, the alleged reason is for privacy. Well, let me tell you something. When I was a kid, growing up in the Midwest, we had subdivisions that had no walls, no fences in between them. If people wanted the privacy, number one, they put shrubs in. But they tended to keep them trimmed low because, you see, back in the 50s and the early 60s and back before then, people would converse. They would barbecue together. Families would get together, and we'd have three or four of them. We'd have massive block parties. Everybody knew each other for the most part, and it was a nice way to meet new people. And we didn't have the kind of garbage that's going on. But we got these walls, and I'm sick and tired of the color, so I'm starting to repaint it. But I'm painting it to mix the what I'm going to be doing to the home. But I went out Friday night to pick up a few groceries at a small market that I go to. And apparently we walked out and left some of the stuff we could there. We didn't take it with us, so I went back the next morning. Unfortunately, I know people. They said, yeah, we noticed that, so we made a note of it and expected you to be back. But unfortunately, they didn't have the product, so I had to go to another store. And I found the product, but I didn't find the size that I wanted, etc. I'm finding, for the most part, people are extremely pleasant with one another, more so than I've seen in a long, long time. That's the positive. A lot of people in our neighborhood out walking with their kids and their bikes and their dogs, et cetera, and that's kind of cool. One of our neighbors has a huge, huge St. Bernard that they had adopted a year and a half ago. And I absolutely love that dog. And that dog sees me and it just perks up and it kind of stops and looks up like, oh, he's there. And they instantly let go of the leash and he comes right to me. And that's kind of a neat thing. So it's nice to be meeting some neighbors. I do get out of here to go to the post office, go to the bank when necessary. And that's about the extent of it. I don't go out very often. But then I live at home, work at home, so my office is, my studio is, et cetera, et cetera. And I have no complaints about any of it. I just wish the good Lord the rest of the people in this house could get back to work and get out of here. It's driving me insane. Let me ask you a question. Is all this that we're facing and we're going through, is this how liberty dies? With thunderous applause? We are seeing the most draconian measures enforced at all levels of government that we've ever seen in our lifetimes. And yet, rather than being alarmed by the things going on, so many of the people out there just seem to think it's great. They applaud. People are being arrested for spending too much time outside, and you applaud. And pastors are being arrested for daring to hold church services, and they applaud. And many of those pastors did hold church services yesterday. One of the churches, the entire parking lot was covered with nails, causing people to have flat tires. Like, this is unbelievable. A child's birthday party is raided by police and they applaud. A young woman is ticketed for going on a leisurely drive alone because it's deemed non-essential travel and the people applaud. In a parade of school teachers and administrators who wanted to drive through neighborhoods and wave at children is busted up by the cops because they were non-essential and the people just thought that was so great. Well, it's happened in our neighborhood and everybody seems to enjoy it. Hey, how about the lone paddleboarder out in the ocean on a beach? No other people around. He's arrested because he's violating quarantine orders and the people applaud. They just think it's arrest them all. I guess they're applauding because of all the prisoners that they're letting out of jail because they're feared that they're going to get coronavirus and that some of them are out there committing crimes immediately. People are being denied life-saving medical treatments because they're not a priority right now. Not essential as deemed by the government. As the entirety of our medical system is focused on one thing, and they applaud. Moments before going on the air, I saw a picture on the website I'd mentioned earlier about dead bodies in bags piling up in closets in hospitals in this country because they can't get them out of there and bury them fast enough. In closets. Not even freezing the bodies or something. This is insane. Oh, of course, they'll expect to never do any autopsies to ensure that they really died of the virus. Businesses are being forcibly closed and padlocked. Owners arrested for refusing to shut down. And these characters applaud. And the dairy farmers and the meat farmers are being incentivized to stop dairy farming, dump their milk, sell their herds. These people out there don't seem to understand these implications. They're being told to use hotlines and online forms provided by your local governments to report your neighbors who don't obey. And are those who actually comply. Scold people day after day for not obeying government edicts. And if any of us dare to question what's happening, you lecture about how we're selfish, a danger to society, and we just don't care about people dying. Well, I have yet to realize that I know somebody who's kicked the bucket of this virus. The people have somehow managed to convince themselves that the people whose lives are affected by a virus are much more important than the people whose lives are being destroyed and in many cases leading to death by the effects of a worldwide economic shutdown and impending worldwide depression, the likes of which no one has ever seen before. At what point will they begin to question what's going on? How far does the government have to push before people are jolted awake from their slumber? How far are people willing to go with all this? I mean, if they told these folks to load their families into train cars so that they could be taken to virus protection facilities for your own safety, would you do it? Yeah, most of them would. That much has become painfully obvious to myself and to many others. And the whole time, they'd be shaking their finger and yelling at those of us who refuse to get on the train, accusing us of being a danger to society and not caring if people died. But you see, they don't have to load people onto train cars and take them to virus protection facilities. They don't have to force them to comply because they're doing that voluntarily. Their minds are already being controlled. They control through fear. They control those people by convincing them that the world is a scary, dangerous place, but they're here to protect them, to care for them, to keep them safe as long as they obey. Because they know as long as you're locked inside your comfortable home with Netflix and Hulu and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and on and on and on, and a cell phone to order DoorDash, all while dangling a $1,200 check in front of them like a carrot on a stick, that they'll comply. No force is necessary for the majority of the herd. They're already imprisoned. Willingly. And they're too blind to see it. I cannot help but remember the Star Wars movie scene where Amidala says in the Senate, "So this is how liberty dies?" With thunderous applause. Something to give serious consideration to. That piece I just shared with you was posted by a friend of mine on Facebook. We don't know who the author is, but we grabbed it and posted it because it's certainly something to think about. I invite you, if you care to go to federalobserver.com. It's on the front page. It's so third or fourth posting down, I guess. Got a picture of a devil. Devil-like creature in the background. So this is how liberty dies. Well worth it. Well worth it. And because of this kind of a mentality, the people just tend to live in fear. Of what? Of everything. Question, do you know when and how you're going to die? I mean, why I may not be among the majority, I believe that only God knows when I'm going to die, and I can't live my life in constant fear of that day arriving. I'm in complete agreement with something Thomas Jackson, or Stonewall Jackson, once said, that God has fixed the time for my death. I do not concern myself about that, but to be always ready, no matter when it may overtake me. My friends, if I'm going to die from a virus, then I'm going to die from a virus. There isn't a damn thing I can do about it. But I'm not going to cower in fear over it. To hell with it. And there's another thing that I refuse to do as well. That being to give up my freedom due to fear. Especially when the level of fear is not proportional to whatever threat is causing it. I'm not saying that there isn't a virus, that this virus is not killing people, and that the way in which it kills is not a horrific way to go. But then again, it's mild if you compare it to a certain viral pathogen such as, Ebola. Yeah, this is a nasty disease. But the media's constant reporting on it is causing people to believe that if you contact, you're going to die. When a more accurate assessment is that only 1 out of every 1,000 people who come down with it end up dying. And so that said, any death caused by this is a terrible loss for their friends and family. And yet as it stands right now, 18.6 thousand people have died from COVID-19. Yet every year, upwards of 55.6 thousand die from regular influenza, the flu. So why all this panic? Every year, some new strain of flu makes its way across the globe, and yet the news media does not spend two-thirds of its broadcast time preaching fear over it. Look what's happened to us because of this widespread fear and panic. We've allowed government to tell us we must lock ourselves away in our homes and avoid places where we can socialize with others. We've been forced to endure both shortages in goods and long waits in lines just to get into stores so we can purchase our weekly groceries. We've seen people freak out if someone gets too close to them and giving others a wary eye if they cough or they sneeze. We've seen people arrested for violating social distancing rules or for leaving their homes for what someone else refers to as non-essential purposes. We've seen people snitching on others for doing these things. We've seen states evict those who are not residents of that state, and other states completely shutting down all traffic entering the state, as has the state of Utah. All of this over a virus that is in all likelihood going to kill fewer people than the annual influenza virus. I've got my own thoughts on the origin of this virus, but we'll keep them to myself for right now because they're not pertinent to the subject at hand. The subject is this simple. How much freedom are you willing to sacrifice just to be promised that government is doing all that is within its power to keep you safe? The ultimate freedom is being able to leave your domicile and travel wherever you want, whenever you want, and interact with others while doing so. And we have seen that right stripped away from us simply because we cower in fear over a damn virus. My fear? And I've got history on my side in supporting that fear, is that once the virus passes, the precautions undertaken to prevent its spread will remain in place. Now, I'm not saying with 100% certainty that they will remain in place, but if history is used as a guide in forming an opinion on the matter, there's a good chance that some, if not all, of these precautions may become a permanent part of our lives. Come on. Look back 19 years. Look back at what happened after 9/11, if you don't believe me. The government enacted all kinds of laws and created an entire agency to fight the supposed terrorist threat, while greatly expanding the power of agencies like the TSA and the NSA. How much freedom did we surrender so that we could go to bed at night knowing our government was keeping us safe from the boogeyman terrorists? How many of those freedoms that we had restored to us in the 19 years since 9/11? No, my fear is that history is repeating itself, and once we surrender these freedoms, we're being asked to surrender to keep us safe from COVID. We'll never see those freedoms again, my friends. Of course, then there's also the hope that people are putting in a vaccine, and the fact that there are many out there who are saying that it can be made mandatory for every person living in this country. And we're watching Billy Gates hard at work, isn't he? I've seen and heard people leading the fight against this virus saying that those who have received any vaccine they produce would be given papers certifying that they have done so. And that those who refuse to take it be kept in self-imposed quarantine status inside their homes. Again, this has not come to pass. But it's only what we've been seeing and hearing. What if you don't want the vaccine? Are you going to be treated just like those who did not believe the official story regarding 9/11? Are you going to be shunned and ostracized, not allowed to leave your home for the remainder of your days? What if you believe that your body's immune system is far better equipped to fight the virus than something concocted in a lab somewhere? Which is probably where the virus was concocted to begin with. Are you going to suffer the consequences of being denied your freedom to travel? This virus doesn't scare me. The government enacting all these new laws and rules by which we must live our lives only angers me. It does not scare me. What scares me is how willingly people submit to the encroachments upon their freedoms simply because they are scared of catching a little cold. There's some spooky stuff going on out there. We could continue on with this commentary, but I guess before we go to the break, I would submit this to you. How much longer are you going to take it? How many more of your freedoms are you going to have to lose before they say, enough already? Me? I've reached my breaking point. Have you? Whatever happens, I'll be free. And if that bothers you, then quote my friend Bart Stewart. Get off my rock. We'll be back.
For a wailing song and a good guitar, the only things that I understand. Oh boy, the only things that I understand.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
The Republic Broadcasting Network late night premiere show Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the Red Pill.
Dollar out. How does interest come about? A dollar in, a dollar out. How does interest come about? A dollar in, a dollar out. How does interest come about? A dollar in, a dollar out. How does interest come about? You say my opinions are not fact. I want to ask you, is it a
billion
and is death in tax? A dollar in.
And yes, all opinion. All opinion. There we go. Now we're fading. Good, we're fading. Got a little bit longer than expected to. All of a sudden, I go outside for a moment. When does this ever stop? The amount of rain we've had out here in Arizona this year has been unbelievable. We are nearing the middle of April. We have yet to have a day over 90 degrees. Normally by this time, we're already starting to have the hundreds. Not this year. It's kind of strange. I mean, not that I'm complaining. It's allowing us to work outside a bit longer. I think about the subject we just discussed, the fear that people have, the complete and total eradication of a life that In my case, I've known for 72-odd years. March 15, 1938, a man named Nikolai Bukharin was executed in Moscow. He had been revered as a giant of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, one who even worked side by side with Lenin. But alas, Bukharin's Marxist chickens had come home to roost by the time he was shot like a dog during Joseph Stalin's reign of terror. And his execution marked the pinnacle of Stalin's show trials of high-level officials. You see, Bukharin had invested in building a political system that inevitably put the reign of power into the hands of just a few strongmen who ended up calling all the shots. It is a system in which suspicion and the smell of treason tend to hang in the air. Oh, socialism, by the way, is just such a system. This is the case where you call it by any other name, whether communism, utopianism, or collectivism. All right, go ahead, slap some lipstick on the pig and call it Democrat or socialism or progressivism or communitarianism. It's all the same damn thing. Lenin and his gang all started out calling themselves socialists, social democrats to be exact. So the fact remains, the path of socialism is ultimately paved with coercion, censorship, and yes, sometimes terror. Does making this statement make me an alarmist? No, I believe it makes me a realist. Socialism is merely a bait-and-switch scheme. Can't you see it? It's what's happening in this country today. Socialism and communism both involve ceding to the state control over the distribution of goods and services for the masses, all of which involves giving up individual rights, giving the state a good measure of control over our personal lives. And this road always leads to tyranny, no matter what you pave it with, and no matter what you name it. Socialism requires a power clique, or as Lenin put it, an elite vanguard, in order to pretend to function. This means going heavy on executive power, rubber stamp light on the legislative. Socialism demands that we place blind trust in whoever takes the reins of power to distribute society's goods and services. And this tiny elite, by the way, typically enjoys enormous privileges and a much higher standard of living than the hoi polloi, simply by being part of the elite nomenclatura. Sure, this oligarchy claims to distribute in the name of equality. That's typically the cover story. Are you beginning to smell it now? The historical fact is that the vanguard, the power clique, eventually takes control of everything it has produced, the medicine, education, housing, food, transportation, and on and on. Its members then bureaucratically ration out, as they see fit, the means of human survival. And in the end, you basically got an elite core of mobsters with the power to decide which folks are more equal than others. Socialism also has a way of producing bloated bureaucracies that in turn produce even greater scarcity. Along the way, this produces ever more corruption and cronyism. Censorship puts down deep roots because dissent cannot be tolerated, or the system would collapse. Those are all prime ingredients for a closed society, my friends, and also for the surveillance state. And yet everybody is supposed to lay back and enjoy it. And so why would we meditate on the gruesome anniversary of Bukharin's execution 78 years after the fact? Because Stalin's purges and the reign of terror he invoked throughout Soviet society are actually pretty natural outgrowths of a system that puts too much power in the hands of too few people. That's why. I once asked my father-in-law, why he and his wife had escaped Stalin's Soviet Union and went to Adolf Hitler's Nazi Germany. Understand, my in-laws are Ukraine, as is my wife, by heritage, by birth. He told me, as we had this discussion in the basement of their home, he said, because Hitler treated the Ukrainians far better than Stalin did. That kind of surprised me. But it set me off on different learning paths. And so now the current professed yearning for socialism in this country, a system so conducive to corruption and cronyism and censorship and coercion, just keeps on rearing its ugly head. One case in point is the open support for Stalin himself in today's Russia. A little over a month ago, on March 5th, the anniversary of Stalin's death, a group of communists led a brazen procession to his grave to pay homage to the man who is responsible for the deaths of untold millions during his reign of terror in the Soviet Union. We're also witnessing a new trendiness for all things socialist and communist among the college youth in this country. They sport T-shirts featuring the image of nauseatingly murderous tyrants like Che Guevara. And thanks to the popularity of the avuncular Bernie Sanders, coupled with an astonishingly ignorance of history, millennials have fast become trusty mouthpieces for socialism. Pretty ironic, because socialism has a way of redistributing power away from the 99% and puts it into the hands of the few central planners. Oh, just a teensy-weensy fraction of 1% at the very top. And then what? Well, too often, the answer is in the title of a recent article written by libertarian Matt Kibbe, entitled Socialism Kills. R.J. Rummel chronicled and documented the killing habits of socialist regimes in his work, Death by Government. There's an indisputable correlation between big government and terror that keeps turning up throughout history. And that's because big government is really Borg government. It just can't get enough of itself. Well, we'd better get acquainted with it if we'd like to avoid it, huh? Bukharin's execution, as well as all of the wild show trials with forced confessions and execution of so many high-level Soviet leaders, caused shock and disillusionment among several prominent communists in the West. One of them, Arthur Koestler, reflected on the impact of the show trials in his novel entitled Darkness at Noon. Bukharin wrote more than 30 letters to Stalin while in prison, none of which were answered. But his last letter was particularly poignant. It is an utter mess of emotions and contradictions, wailing self-pity, confessions to crimes, pleas for his innocence, Stockholm syndrome, total despair, hope against hope. He referred to Stalin by his revolutionary nickname, Koba, in an attempt to harken back to their old Bolshevik days of being comrades in arms. But Bukharin knew he was finished. And in that last letter, he requested poison to drink rather than a bullet to the head. And according to one report, he was actually made to watch the executions of 16 other defendants and then shot last. He requested to see his wife and infant son. Obviously not granted or answered, because his wife was sent to a gulag prison camp. He even requested to be exiled to America, where he promised to wage Stalin's war against by then enemy of the people, Leon Trotsky, founder of the Red Army. Which seems a kind of a pathetic Hail Mary pass, doesn't it? He also expressed regret for palling around Lev Kamenev, another high-ranking Bolshevik that Stalin had purged earlier. Here's how Birkin's letter to Stalin ended. He said, In me, you have lost one of your most capable generals, one who is genuinely devoted to you. But that is all past. It is bitter to reflect on all of this, but I'm preparing myself mentally to part from this veil of tears, and there's nothing in me toward all of you, toward the party. But a great and boundless love. I'm doing everything, crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's, and had a headache and with tears in my eyes. My conscience is clear before you now, Koba. I ask you one final time for your forgiveness, only in your heart, not otherwise. And for that reason, I embrace you in my mind. One Soviet scholar in particular, Stephen Cohen, has defended Bukharin as courageous. And as one who never truly confessed, but engaged in a war of words, in a Aesopian language. During his spoken defense at the trial itself. But be that as it may, Bukharin's letter displays the full human wreckage that lay at the end of the road of socialism. A fascinating postscript here is that Cohen came into possession of the last letter Bukharin wrote from prison to his young wife, Anna Larina. Cohen actually delivered it into her hands in 1992, 54 years later. Bukharin's letter to Anna displayed in stark clarity what a socialist system ultimately does to the most intimate of human relationships. Once socialism is entrenched, it is tailor-made to separate human beings and stand in the way of intimacy. Indeed, its general promise is that the good of the collective trumps the good of the individual, which means that it's actually invested in wreaking havoc on family relationships and loyalties. What I share with you here in a moment is an excerpt from Bukharin's letter to Anna Larina. Loaded with pathos and suffering and loneliness and all manner of contradictions. A testament to the fact that in the end, we only want familial closeness with real flesh and blood people. Not communitarian efficiency. And yet at the same time, Bukharin extols the very system, socialism, that would destroy these relationships for him and for everyone else. And he says, "My sweet Anushka, my darling, I write to you on the eve of the trial. I write to you with a definite purpose, which I emphasize three times over. No matter what you read, no matter what you hear, no matter how horrible these things might be, no matter what might be said to me, nor what I might say, endure everything courageously and calmly. Prepare for the family. Help all of them. I fear for you and the others, but most of all for you. Don't feel malice about anything. Remember that the great cause of the USSR lives on, and this is the most important thing. Personal fates are transitory and wretched by comparison. A great ordeal awaits you. I beg you, my dearest, muster all your strength, tighten all the strings of your heart, and do not allow them to break. Do not talk carelessly with anybody about anything." You see, my friends, that's where it ends. Bukharin felt compelled to say that the great union of Soviet socialist republics is the most important thing. But be careful. Oh, so very careful what you say to anyone. Political correctness on steroids, as it were. That is socialism in a nutshell for all of us. And no doubt the stated intentions are oh so pure and oh so good, like liberté, égalité, fraternité. It's the sort of compassion Flannery O'Connor wrote when she noted that tenderness leads to the gas chamber. And that is because at the end of the day, socialism is a manipulative machine of human cruelty powered only by a blind greed for more power. It forces people to finally mince their words or remain silent. Of course, it operates under the fig leaf of equality, because how else can it seal the deal? No, socialism, my friends, is a well-trod path to absolute power. And somehow an awful lot of folks miss the memo that a system without checks and balances on political power is conducive to creating power mongers and even monsters. Lord Acton famously stated, "Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." And that warning is oft-quoted. but little noted, despite the fact that history proves it correct time and time and time and bloody time again. Nazi Germany, Mao's China, Kim Jong-un's North Korea, Pol Pot's Cambodia, and a myriad of other examples. Lord Acton's statement has even been laboratory tested, and you can check that out in this Leadership Quarterly article. Bukharin Bolshevik comrades had held him in the highest esteem. He was a prominent leader of the Russian Revolution and party theorist who worked side by side with Lenin, the firebrand who overthrew Tsarist Russia and entrenched communism there. Lenin even dubbed Bukharin the golden boy of the revolutions. But Bukharin basically had two killers, as did all the other cronies in the government's power clique. No one, of course, was the Soviet dictator Stalin. The other killer was the ideology of socialism that Bukharin put in place, a system of unchecked power that grows monsters like Stalin. Now, we need to remember this. When soft socialism, with its siren song of equality, is left to its own devices, it takes ever more rigid forms. The political hubris of progressives who know better than you and I, and with such utter certainty, always leads to central control and corruption and cronyism and censorship and abject conformity. Think about that. What is that, 5 or 6 C's? Certainty, central control, corruption, cronyism, censorship, and conformity. The more than 100 million victims of communism shows just how slippery a slope socialism is. Any person of goodwill who is familiar with the history and realities of socialism would do everything possible to avoid going down that minefield of a road. Think about that. But if you think about it too deeply, you may not sleep well tonight. I'll be publishing this commentary by Stella Morabito later this evening at federalobserver.com. It is amazingly profound. Absolutely profound. It is nearly a month old. It was actually written, published on that anniversary of Bukharin's assassination. It says so much, my friends. So darn much. And so, what cometh for the rest of the week? Don't know. Haven't looked that far ahead. As with so many people, we're trying to get by day to day. We're trying to see what the next turn of the screw is going to bring us. The Dow closed down 328 points today to end their session at 23,390. S&P 500 was off about 29 points at 2761. NASDAQ up 38 points. Gold was up another 640 today. Well, it's still moving because gold moves 24 hours a day. Currently at $1,767. Don't try to buy it for that. It ain't possible. Gee, oil's back up a little bit, 32 cents. We're still at a whopping $22.73 a barrel. And we're out of time. Do we have the time? Thanks for your time this evening. Good night, and I'll see you tomorrow. Do you think we have time? Do you think we have time? These are the days of the open hand. They will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most
stop us, I'm not sure. If we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Do hand. Oh, we hold on to what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chance and say, I sang it 20 years and a day, 'cause nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.